Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the sixth birthday Failed Critics podcast. I'm Steve Norman. And I'm joined by Owen Hughes.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. Yeah. Hi, Steve. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. I'm back hosting a podcast, which I haven't done for ages now.
No one can tell.
Because I don't do that anymore. I've been moved out of the host chair and into the guest's chair.
How does it feel?
Well, it's actually, I'm not really the guest. I'm more of what Alan Davis is to QI because I'm just always there. Yeah, it seems odd that we've been doing this nonsense for 6 years. Also, it seems to work quite well because the second film we ever reviewed was Avengers Assemble, and we're recording this on Infinity Wars Eve.
Infinity Wars Eve, yeah. Because you're going to the midnight screening and we needed to fill some time.
Yes, as I'm reviewing for other sources.
It's okay, you can say the name.
Yes, I'm doing the review for Set the Tape. I bet all the proper writers got really narky about that. The fucking idiot got the review of that one. But yeah, I've decided to, because my editors there are right bastards, and, really push you for deadlines. So I'm going at midnight to see that, which I'm actually really looking forward to.
Whoa, 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 just to stop Steve there. We do have a full spoiler-laden review of Avengers Infinity War, which will be at the end of the podcast, right after the credits. So stick around for that.
Yes, but we are going to do a quiz. There's no real prize. But we're going back to the original quiz format, which was, for those who don't remember, I would get the filmography of an actor or actress and read out select films from that, and the people would have to guess who it was.
Yeah, and we should probably advise people not to go back to our first episode on the 25th of April 2012, all those years ago, because there wasn't a quiz on that one. The quiz came in later, didn't it? It was one of your inventions for the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, you can go first then, as you started the whole thing.
Okay, so I will start off with this first person in 2005. Mm. They were in Coach Carter.
The Rock?
No.
No, I don't know if he was in that.
In 2006, they were in Step Up.
Channing Tatum?
You are correct. You've got it in there early, and you've got that right.
Nice. Right. So we're doing a best of five for this, right? So you could still come back. It's not just the one person. I'm going to start with my person. They were in 8 Mile.
8 Mile. Eminem would be too obvious, but that's the first one I'm going with.
It wasn't. It wasn't Eminem. 2003, Bad Boys 2.
Who's it? No, Carry On.
Carry On. In 2007, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Oh, who played his bloody wife and his mum in that film? Next.
Next, okay. They were in Bad Lieutenant in 2009.
Bad Lieutenant. What was Bad? That was the Nicolas Cage film, wasn't it?
It was, yep.
It's not Nicolas Cage, though.
It's not Nicolas Cage. Next one, in 2011, they were in Take Shelter.
Is it Brittany Murphy?
It's not Brittany Murphy.
Was that the right person, or was she in 8 Mile? Was she his girlfriend?
I have no idea.
8 Mile?
Don't know. Do not know.
Right.
Okay. It will get a bit easier after this one. I'm going in chronological order because them's the rules. But in 2012, they were in Premium Rush.
I didn't even have heard of Premium Rush.
No, it was the one on the bikes.
No.
No. All right. 2013, Man of Steel.
Man of Steel. No. Lawrence Fishburne.
No, it wasn't Lawrence Fishburne.
Of course it wasn't.
Yeah. From 2010 to 2014, they were in Boardwalk Empire.
I don't know.
No.
No.
2016, they were in Midnight Special.
I'm trying to think of who played his mum in 8 Mile. I can't think of her name. I bet that's who it is.
I'm going to give you, three more guesses, I think.
Because the only other two people, other than the two that I've guessed about in 8 Mile, was, I think, was it whoever played his mum and Busta Rhymes. And it ain't Busta Rhymes.
No, Busta Rhymes was not in Man of Steel.
No.
2016, they were in Elvis and Nixon.
It's going to be whoever played his mum. I can't think of her name.
I'll give you a clue for the last two. It's not a woman.
Oh, so it's not who played his mum then?
No.
8 Mile. Who was in 8 Mile?
Also, I think you're getting stuck on 8 Mile. Maybe you should focus on some of the other films. 2016, they were in Nocturnal Animals.
Nah.
No, and last one, earlier this year, they were in The Shape of Water.
Michael Shannon?
It's Michael Shannon. Got it on the last one.
Wow.
Man.
There you go.
Yeah. That makes it 1-1, yeah?
It does.
Mm.
And me up next. So, 2007, Ghost Rider.
Nicolas Cage?
No.
Oh.
2011, A Few Best Men.
Who else is in Ghost Rider? Was that the one Idris Elba was in?
It's not Idris Elba.
He was in one of them, I think.
In 2012, they're in What to Expect When You're Expecting.
What's his name? McConaughey?
No.
No.
Also in 2012, they were in Ice Age, Continental Drift.
Christ, who did the voices in that? I don't even know who did the voices in that one.
They have not been in any subsequent Ice Age film.
I don't know. Move on. Next
in
one.
In 2013, they were in Pain and Gain.
Oh, the guy who plays Falcon in Avengers?
No.
Ah, okay.
In 2015, they were in Pitch Perfect 2.
Don't know.
In 2016, they are in Grimsby.
Mark Strong?
No.
Ugh.
In 2017, they're in Pitch Perfect 3.
I've never seen a Pitch Perfect movie. And I know that's going to really annoy a lot of people, but Amy, what's her name?
You can't. I can't accept Amy, what's her name?
Amy Adams?
No. You have reached the end of this round.
Shit.
It was Rebel Wilson.
Oh, for fuck's sake. This person, I want to start with this, but that won't make it easier. It can be a bonus, and if you get it on this, I'll be amazed. They were in Busta Rhymes feat. P. Diddy and Pharrell, Past the Courvoisier Part 2, which is a video
the
short.
The Courvoisier.
That'll do, yeah.
Is the correct name of the brandy drink.
Okay. Courvoisier, then. Yeah. Mm. Busta Rhymes feat. P. Diddy and Pharrell, yeah. 2002.
Busta Rhyme now.
Nope.
No.
That's not a surprise. That is not a surprise. 2005, starting properly, they were in Jarhead.
Jarhead? Who was in Jarhead? Jake Gyllenhaal.
It wasn't Jake Gyllenhaal. In 2006, they were in Miami Vice.
Jamie Foxx.
It was Jamie Foxx. So you go 2-1 ahead anyway.
Mm. Good.
Cool.
Right, so this guy, 2002, they were in the TV show Spooks.
I don't think I ever watched it.
For 2 years.
Was Kit Harington in Spooks? I know he's in the film.
He wasn't in the TV show Spooks, he was in the film version.
Yeah, okay.
2005, 5, they were in A Sound of Thunder.
Never heard of it. Bob Hoskins.
2006, they were in The Last King of Scotland.
Who would have been in Last King of Scotland and Spooks?
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest, what? No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay, in 2011, they were in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I can't think of any British people in that. I don't know. I'll just say John Lithgow.
No.
No.
In 2012, they were in Jack Reacher.
Oh, shit. What's her name? Is it a woman? You just keep saying guy.
I can't tell you that.
Yeah, but you keep saying guy. Is that meant to mislead me?
If I've not done anything intentionally.
Okay. No, don't know. Carry on.
Okay. In 2014, I'll give you two films from 2014. Interstellar and Selma.
Oh, my God. Why can't I remember his name? He's the black guy who...
Bit racist, Owen.
Well, he is. He's back.
I didn't even notice. I was noticing more for his acting talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you know who my favourite actor of all time is?
Sidney Poitier.
Mr. Sidney Poitier.
Oh, man. I can't think what his name is. I know him. I can see his face. I just can't remember his name.
I can't give you a point for just knowing his name.
Well, if I want to
give you some more films.
Give...
In 2016, they're in a United Kingdom.
Yeah, it's not helping. Fuck me. Keep going.
2018, The Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah, yeah, I know who he is then. I definitely know him. I just can't think what his name is.
I'll give you the last film that I can give you, was Gringo.
Oh, I don't know what Gringo is. Jesus Christ, what's his name? This is really annoying. It's like David. Oh God, this is excruciating. Is Odge something? No, it's not Odge something. You know who I mean, though, right? David.
I know what the answer is.
Oliwello or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me.
Well Googled, Owen.
That wasn't a Google. That was an actual struggle. God damn.
So that makes it 2 apiece, does it?
Yes.
2 apiece.
In 2003, they were in Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
It's Keira Knightley.
It's not Keira Knightley. In 2004, they were in The Terminal.
Don't know.
Okay. In 2007, they were in Blackout.
I don't know what Blackout is.
Oh, right. Moving on. 2008, they were in Vantage Point.
Seen Vantage Point?
Yeah, not many people have and liked it.
Say Orlando Bloom to keep this moving.
It wasn't Orlando Bloom. In 2009, they were in Star Trek.
Not Zoe Saldana.
It was Zoe Saldana, yes. Yeah. The next clue was going to be Avatar. And I thought, yeah, you'll get it straight away. Yeah.
Right. 1996, The Cable Guy.
Jim Carrey.
No. 1997, Anaconda.
John Voight?
No. 1998, Armageddon.
Armageddon and Anaconda? Don't know.
2000, Shanghai Noon.
Owen Wilson?
Yes.
Oh, yes. That came from the Anaconda knowledge, I'll have you know.
Well, I mean, your Anaconda knowledge is second to none, Owen.
Yeah. Okay, 1985, The Goonies.
Sean Astin.
It's not... Nope. In 1997, they were in Night Watch.
What on earth is Night Watch?
Nope, never mind. 1997 as well, they were in Mimic.
Corey Haim.
Nope, not Corey Haim.
Corey Felding.
No.
Corey someone.
It wasn't Corey anyone. In 2000, they were in Hollow Man.
Kevin Bacon.
No, not Kevin Bacon. In 2007, they were in No Country for Old Men.
Don't know.
No. 2007, Planet Terror.
Don't know what that is.
That's the Grindhouse Rodriguez movie.
Okay.
Yeah, never mind. Also in 2007, where they had a prolific year, they were in American Gangster.
No, carry on.
In 2008, they were in Milk.
Continue.
Continue. 2010, they were in Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Continue.
2010, Jonah Hex.
Oh, I don't know. No one's ever seen that.
All right. 2010, True Grit.
No, carry on.
2013, Gangster Squad.
I'm not going to get this. No, carry on.
2013, Old Boy.
No, keep going.
Cameo role in 2014's Guardian of the Galaxy.
No, Hasselhoff had a cameo in the second one. Who cameoed in it? But that should be the one that gets it. Who cameoed in that?
They also,
Nathan Fillion?
Nope. They also cameoed in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Stan Lee.
It wasn't Stan Lee. 2015, Sicario.
What's his bloody name?
Well, if I told you that.
Benicio Del Toro.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Benicio Del Toro. 2015, they were in Everest.
But no, it's not. No, carry on.
And 2016, Hail Caesar.
No, I've not even seen that one.
No. Okay, last one. 2018, Avengers Infinity War.
What's his name? He was the fella that was in...
all those films I mentioned.
Yeah, but other ones as well. He played the Collector, didn't he, in Guardians of the Galaxy? And
no, I give up.
Josh Brolin. He only bloody plays Thanos.
Him. So what's the score now?
3-3.
3-3.
And it's first of 5, isn't it?
Hmm. Okay, 1988, Mystic Pizza.
What the fuck is Mystic Pizza? I haven't got a clue.
Okay, 1990, Flatliners.
Kevin Bacon?
No, 1991, Hook.
Robin Williams?
No. Skip to 1997, My Best Friend's Wedding.
No, not a clue. Mel Gibson?
No. 2001, The Mexican.
The Mexican?
Mm.
2001, Antonio Banderas?
Mm. No. Also 2001, Ocean's 11.
I know who I want to say, but I think it'd be a bit too obvious. Don Cheadle, I'll go with instead.
No. 2003, Mona Lisa Smile.
Matt Damon?
No.
No.
2006, Charlotte's Web.
I don't know. Don't have a clue.
We're coming to the end now.
Yeah.
2017, another voice role, Smurfs, The Lost Village.
What the fuck? I've not a clue. David Cross.
No.
No.
I'll tell you what the answer is.
Is that it?
Julia Roberts.
Oh, fucking Julia fucking Roberts.
Mm.
Starting in 2007, I Could Never Be Your Woman.
No idea.
No. 2009, The Lovely Bones.
No idea.
No. They had a voice role in the UK version of Ariete in 2010.
Oh, no chance I'm going to get that one.
Okay. 2011, they were in Hannah.
Nope.
2012, Byzantium.
What is that?
It's a British vampire thing. I think if I give you the next film they are in, then that's just too obvious. Because I know you've seen that and will guess it like immediately. So I'm just going to skip on a little bit and say 2014, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I don't know. No.
2015, Brooklyn.
No, keep going.
2017, Ed Sheeran, Galway Girl.
Probably Liam Neeson.
Is that Liam Neeson? I'd love to see him prancing around a field. And yeah. 2017, they were in Loving Vincent.
I don't know.
And then last one, 2017, Lady Bird.
No, give up.
It was Saoirse Ronan, nominated for 3 Oscars.
I wouldn't even know how to pronounce that anyway.
So that's 4 all.
Right. 1985, The Colour Purple.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, well done.
Oh, hey!
Yes. So a half-hour quiz has finished.
It's a long one.
Time now for what we've been watching when we take a look at some of the films we've seen recently. A couple of films I'm going to talk about, both seen them on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I have seen a Netflix original called The Discovery, and it stars Jason Segel, Robert Redford, Jesse Plemons, and it is about a man who discovers proof of an afterlife, and it causes a lot of people to commit suicide because they want to get to the afterlife. And it's about him and his relationship with his sons, and also this kind of, it seems a bit like a cult, but he's got a load of followers who come and live with him at this big mansion. And I found it to be an interesting concept that starts off really well and it's quite engaging at the start, and then just loses my interest the more it goes on, because it just kind of falls apart around itself, stops making sense, and becomes a bit difficult to follow. And
the Netflix way. That's yeah. how most of their shows start and finish.
Yeah, while at the start you're like, all right, this is interesting, this is good. I like Jason Segel anyway, and Robert Redford is Robert Redford, really. But yeah, but it just gradually starts. You start thinking when you at the start and towards the middle, you're thinking, right, this is interesting. Right, what's going on here? And then from like the middle one, you're thinking, this is stupid now. Oh, this is a bit rubbish. Oh, is that it? And you're interested, it just wanes in the end, and you just think that was something that could have been really good, really interesting, really thought-provoking, and it looked like it was going to go that way, and it didn't. And ends up just being a bit of a disappointment, really. Quite a lot of Netflix movies. They're better at doing TV shows than movies, I think.
But they still also have the same issue with some of their TV shows, I feel. Like the OA. Was it the OA that was called? Which started like it had an intriguing premise, and then by like episode 4, you're like, why am I still watching this?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they do have a little bit of a habit of doing that. Narcos as well, I think, was great to begin with. And then by the end, it was just like, it was enjoyable, I guess. But like for the first few episodes, it was just amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think they do have a habit of tailing off in some of their shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've seen is Money Monster, the film from a couple of years ago with George Clooney and Julia Roberts and Jack O'Connell. It's about a TV host presenter who kind of does a show based around stock tips, I think it is, or the stock market and what you should buy on and what you should sell. A tip that he had given lost a lot of people some money, including this guy who comes onto the show and takes him hostage effectively. As well as that, it kind of goes into an investigation into this company that he backed and some dodgy dealings that they're doing. Again, that's a film that should be a lot more exciting than what it is. It just ends up being quite very dull for a film where it should be really exciting and kind of high adrenaline, high energy. There's not any like quick witty dialogue. There's not really a great deal of action. You never really feel any of the main characters are in any real danger. The kind of investigation side of it is just by the books, boring.
I don't know. I thought it was okay. I enjoyed the performances.
It's fine. It's fine. It's just not great, and it's a little bit boring for what it could be.
It's not that long though, is it? It's only like an hour and a half. Yeah.
No, which does help.
It reminded me a little bit of Phone Booth in that it's quite a small cast, very close-knit set.
Yeah.
You know, but without Kiefer Sutherland coming along and killing people. But
yeah.
Yeah.
It's not one that I'd watch again, but I'm not disappointed that I watched it.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I got a free rental of this from Brooker, our old mate Brooker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He had some, I don't know, something on his phone that gave him a free rental, or I don't know what it was. I think it was through O2. And he just said, do I want it? And I was like, yep, I'll take that and watch it for free. I didn't feel like I'd wasted my time.
No.
I like Jack O'Connell. I like seeing him in different
roles. He's very good. Yeah. I think he's a very good young actor who I would very much like to see more of.
Yeah. Have you seen the Western series that he's in on Netflix?
No.
No, I haven't either, but I've heard it's incredible. Yeah. No, I do like him as well. Obviously, 71, which we've talked about in the past. And
Yeah.
How great he was in that.
And there was another film that I've seen him in. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like...
Stardust, wasn't it? In the prison?
It's the one... is that the one where he's like a POW in World War II? He starts out as a runner.
Oh, no, that's Angelina Jolie's film, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember. Unbroken, that's maybe it. Was the name that's, of that. Yeah. that's a really good film as well.
His dodgy Brooklyn accent, though.
Well, yeah, you know.
But doing American voices always happens.
Yes. Owen, what have you seen?
Quite recently, I rewatched Alien. And because I own all the films and I thought I'd do an Alien binge. I watched the first one, thought it was amazing as ever, you know, just such a great film. And what kind of happened was I ran out of time. I watched the first one like weeks and weeks ago, and it's got to the point now I'm like, I can't really call it an Alien binge if I only watched the first one. I had to look at the run times of the sequels, and I thought, I'm not really in the mood for Aliens either. So for the first time in about nearly a decade, I imagine, I watched Alien 3, the David Fincher film. I always remember it as being not as good as the other two. Some interesting points being made about kind of motherhood and the kind of crippling anxiety that it instills, and being trapped and all of her surroundings reflecting her internal emotions. And so it had a lot of interesting things to say, but without actually being that great a film, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was a lot better this time around. I think, I don't know, maybe I've just, my tastes in films have changed a bit more, but I got a lot more out of it on this rewatch. And it's not a scary film. I think that's probably its biggest failing, is in that it tries to be this sort of alien replica, and it's all claustrophobic and they're all trapped in this thing they can't get out of. Like, originally, of course, they were trapped on a spaceship, and now they're trapped inside a prison with no weapons and no hope of rescue. So there's that side to it, which I think is quite good. And Sigourney Weaver, she's great. She's not given great lines to work with, but she does well with it. Her story seems a bit rushed to me as well. Like, everything that goes on between her and, what's his name? The Charles Dance, the doctor. It just seems a bit rushed. Like, the way they get together is all a bit like, too soon into the story. I've heard that the way that the director's cut is edited gives a lot more, makes a lot more sense out of their relationship. I haven't seen the director's cut. I will do it at some point. It's definitely down for me to watch. But I think what I heard recently, I was talking to Sean Wilson, who's a film reviewer, and he was telling me about how Aliens was cut, and what was cut out of James Cameron's film was a story about how Ripley had a daughter who died. Which,
right.
Did you know about that?
No.
No, that was the first time I heard about it too. They cut that story out of it, which is a real shame, but that gives a lot more meaning to the relationship with Newt, I think, in that, you know, Newt in Aliens is the almost surrogate daughter. Because always previously, I just thought Newt was one of the more annoying points of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that gives that more meaning. And also, if you watch Alien 3, the fact that she's kind of pregnant, if you know that she's had a child and lost a child and has also lost Newt at the beginning of this one, it also gives a lot more purpose to how she doesn't want to give birth, even to an alien. She would rather be stabbed or shot, or, well, obviously not shot because they haven't got any guns, but yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was great in this as well, actually, this time around. So now I understand a bit more about Ripley's history and past. It just makes the film more interesting. What I thought also let it down, as well as the fact that it's not really that great as a horror film, was the soundtrack. I just thought the soundtrack was really cheesy. Very, very 1992, which is obviously when the film came out. But I mean, it sounds like I'm ragging on it again, but I did enjoy it, and I will definitely seek out the director's cut at some point.
Yeah.
Probably won't watch Resurrection, though, during my so-called binge.
Okay.
Yeah, I might skip that one. It's always... I don't think that's going to improve on a rewatch. Bag of shite, that is.
Okay. So you've also seen Rampage.
Rampage. I explained to you, the only reason I went to see it was on my way out of work today. There was a massive queue that wasn't moving due to a main road being completely closed, just at rush hour. And so I thought, well, sod this. Instead of going straight on towards the roundabout where the accident had blocked everything, I just turned the car around and went in the opposite direction, straight to the cinema. The only thing that was on at 6 o'clock was Rampage, the comic, not comic, but the video game adaptation by Brad Peyton, starring his mate, his good pal, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and also starring Naomi Harris. Yeah, what to say about Rampage that people won't already have assumed about it? I mean, for anyone who didn't play Rampage, has never played the classic sort of arcade game, the whole purpose of that is you smash buildings. You play as a big gorilla and you beat the clock to smash some buildings whilst airplanes and helicopters and soldiers all come and try and shoot you down. It's basically like a bit of King Kong, but more violent, obviously. And the way that the film plays out, obviously there's no story to follow in some, in, you know, any great depth from the arcade classic, but this is essentially Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a primatologist, which is apparently an actual profession. You can be a primatologist. Seeing The Rock as a scientist is a bit weird.
So that mean you're studying primatology then?
He's not studying. He is a qualified primatologist.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah. What it basically means is they've got a setup to link a big, massive rock, like a big, massive action star with a film about a big white albino gorilla that goes and smashes things, and that's essentially what happens. Shit,
all you need really, isn't
yeah
it?
Shit falls out of space, turns a couple of creatures into ginormous monsters, and they go and smash up Chicago. That's the story, and it's about as good as it sounds. What I was surprised by actually was the way that it cast aside some characters. Like Joe Manganiello, who's one of the bigger names in the movie, wasn't really in it for very long. He didn't have a massive part to play, which seems a surprise. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was given a lot to do, and played a kind of weird cowboy character, which was always a bit cheesy every time he was on screen. So I wasn't so sure about that. But what I thought worked really well was they kept the leads as Dwayne Johnson and Naomi Harris. There were other people in it, obviously. Marlon Akerman, she was the kind of bad guy, if you like. And just other people now and then popped up. But yeah, it was basically The Rock and Naomi Harris. And they were actually thought they worked quite well together. And yeah, it does what it says on the tin, basically. It's a big action disaster movie. Dwayne Johnson's worked with Brad Peyton in the past as well. Just trying to remember what it was. They both did San Andreas for a start. So, you know, their background is in disaster movies when they work together. There's San Andreas 2, which should be coming out in a couple of years, I think, next year or the year after. They worked together on Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. And so, yeah. He knows how to direct The Rock. He knows how to show off The Rock's qualities in a movie like this. It wasn't the waste of time I half expected it to be. You know, there was actually a bit more going on. I think it tried to make a point. I don't know whether I was just reading too much into it at this point, but I think it tried to make a point about how useless and how pointless in society guns are. Because basically, what happens in one scene, The Rock saves George, the gorilla, from being shot. You know, he manages to calm George down without any interference from the police, which I think is probably a bit of a commentary. And then obviously throughout the whole film, as George gets bigger and angrier, he has a mutation, which means he can heal really quickly. So the guns that are used on him don't stop him. So I think it's probably a bit of social commentary going on there. But otherwise, it's no great shakes. It's fine. I ate a bag of sweets through the whole thing, which probably helped to stop me from drifting off at certain periods where they were trying to be all melodramatic. But yeah, it was all right. What also Good. Struck me was the use of motion capture, because it seems like they know how to do it with apes now. You know, we had the Planet of the Apes films. We had King Kong, was it last year or the year before? We've got this now in Rampage. The way that the people behind the motion capture stuff move, the way that the animation works with these style creatures is actually pretty good. It's pretty impressive. But I mean, that's it really. I don't have a huge amount to add. I think if you've seen the trailer, if you even know a little bit about The Rock's career history and monster movies, then, you know, you might get something out of it. It's not the absolute worst film ever made, as some film snobs make out. But, it's okay. It's watchable. If people still watched films on TV these days, then it might be the okay thing to watch on a Sunday afternoon.
Okay. Okay, well, that is it pretty much. But what have you got to recommend people for the time ahead?
I haven't seen it yet, which is frustrating because we've supposedly got press access to it. But season 6 of Taskmaster starts on Dave next week. Starts on Wednesday, May the 2nd at 9 p.m. on Dave. Do you watch Taskmaster?
I don't.
You definitely should. I think it's one of the most funny shows around at the moment. It's hosted by Greg Davis and his kind of sidekick, but also mastermind of Taskmaster, which is Alex Horn, who also released the Horn Section podcast this year, which was great, which is brilliant. It was a lot like his old radio show, which is a lot of fun. But yeah, the I guess the main thing people want to know about the new series of Taskmaster, who is in it, because every season changes. It's got Alice Levine, who is, you probably heard her if you ever listened to My Dad Wrote a Porno. She's on that podcast. It's got Asim Chaudhry, who's from People Just Do Nothing. He's the kind of manager. Would you say he's a manager? He calls himself a manager of those.
Yeah.
Those guys, isn't he? Yeah. It's also got Lisa Tarbuck. Tim Vine is on it. That should be quite fun. But probably the biggest name they've managed to get in so far, I think, is Russell Howard will be on Taskmaster.
Right.
Which I think he's friends with Alex Horn in real life. You know, they're good pals and everything. But Russell Howard is in Taskmaster, a show on Dave, which is a bit of a coup for them, I think. Wednesday, 9 p.m. Definitely, even without having seen it yet, it's definitely something I'm recommending. It's particularly for you, Steve, if you've not watched any of them before.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you? What are you recommending?
I am recommending on Netflix a show that's now 2 seasons in, but it's the Santa Clarita Diet, the Drew Barrymore, Timothy Olyphant sitcom. About Drew Barrymore's character, who is, I suppose, a zombie in many ways. She's dead. Yeah. She's undead, but she's like conscious. You know, she's aware of what's going on. She's not like a brains zombie trying to. Yeah,
and they're real estaters, aren't they, or something?
Yeah. Realtors.
That's it.
Which doesn't seem to be a bigger deal in the UK as what it is in America.
Yeah, because the system over there is a lot different.
It just seems to be like they're estate agents.
Yeah, I think it works slightly different out in America.
Because you have to
get a license and then you can just go and sell people's property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought it was very funny and very well done. And yeah, just a good watch. I think Drew Barrymore and Timothy Olyphant.
Timmy, good old pal Timmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Timmy Elephants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they work very well together as a duo. They're very good.
Yeah.
And the support cast is good as well. So it's well worth a watch. Or if you don't get on with that, but you want a comedy that's on Netflix, The Good Place as well is great.
Yeah, I watched it on your strong recommendation.
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. Really good. Really good show. Yeah. Basically mimics Lost in many ways. But
yeah.
Obviously, it's funny rather than super dramatic.
I did quite like the one of the end scenes of season two with Ted Danson behind a bar.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. I'm still not sure about the twist with his character, but, you know, it's obviously working because the show's still very watchable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for us and our sixth birthday.
Yeah.
What were you doing on your sixth birthday?
I think I had a party where I tried to cheat at pin the tail on the donkey and piss everyone off. That's what I
probably got sick eating too much jelly and ice cream.
Classic.
Nothing's changed. Yeah. Nothing has changed in the last 20 odd years. Yeah. But as always, when we get to a milestone like this, obviously we would like to thank James Diamond for coming up with this idea and then abandoning us to make it better.
Yeah.
and all the other people we've had contribute regularly. So Jerry, Carol,
Matt Lamborn, obviously.
Matt Lamborn, Brooker, Paul Field,
Brian Plank,
everybody else.
Tony Black,
Brian, Callum, of course.
Yeah, did you say Carol?
I did say Carol.
Yeah.
And everybody else who's contributed regularly, all of you lot who spend your time listening to this. And, of course, myself, because without me, this wouldn't have been possible.
You literally, I think, thanked everyone in the history of the podcast but me. So, you know.
You're here, though.
I'm not taking it personally.
No.
We'll just see if we ever do one of these.
Thanks to you. Thanks to you as well, Owen,
for putting up with
me for 6 years.
Yeah.
We haven't even met each other once per year.
That's true.
Have we?
No. The equivalent of it. Three times in total, isn't it? Two or three times?
Yeah.
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 Man. That is sad.
I talk to you more than I talk to some people I'm very close to.
Yeah, but we're blokes. We're blokes. You don't talk to people that openly in real life, do you? It's just not manly.
No, bloody blokey blokes.
Yeah. We have a topic to share. We come and chat about it online and then sign off for a week or longer now.
Yeah. Do you know what? I thought the other day, like if I died...
Yeah. Would I know?
You would probably wouldn't even know. You just think that I'd got fed up with all of you and stopped doing podcasts.
Yeah, that's true. Whereas for me, what you'd be expecting some fanfare.
That's quite sad, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're going to give me your mom's phone number and then I'll text her every week and say, "Is Steve all right?" We can just say, "Steve, okay."
She'd probably end up texting you more asking the same question.
Yeah. We need to set up some sort of alert.
Oh, you'll know. Trust me, you'll know.
Just through our psychic connection. Just something goes off in like spider sense, and like Steve, something's happened to Steve.
Yeah. Anyway, so that is it for our sixth birthday special. The next time we'll be back will probably be for the Han Solo movie. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you then.
Thank you very much. Remember to listen on after the credits for our review of Infinity War. Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week. With original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps. Or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlock and Field & Mullinger's Underground Nights from the Failed Media Network of Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
So we are here at the end of this sixth birthday special to do a review of Avengers Infinity War, which we didn't plan on doing when we started
doing the sixth birthday podcast, but we decided to do after we both saw Infinity War about 48 hours later. So,
I hadn't actually started editing the podcast yet, so I thought, you know what, we can just tag this on the end.
Yeah, we can just do a bit of Infinity War and it'll be fine.
Let's see.
Yeah.
But you've had longer than me to think about this, because you saw the midnight screening and then you've already written a review of it as well.
Yeah, as I was doing the review for another parish, I decided to go to the midnight viewing screening. So I saw it as pretty much as soon as I could. I think you only saw it yesterday, didn't you, Owen?
Yeah, I went to it on yesterday, as in Thursday evening.
Yeah.
And I've not really had anyone to talk to about it because, I've talked to my wife, Felisa, about it. But,
and all she said is, shut up about these bloody superhero movies, Owen.
Well, she surprised me, actually, because she said to me, I enjoyed that. Normally, I have to say, what did you think of it then? Before she just gives a response. Normally, it's just like, it was another film, wasn't it? But this time was a proper, like, yeah, I enjoyed that. And I think that's kind of reflective how... most of the first impressions have been from what I've gathered online today on Twitter and such.
Yeah.
I feel like we should get the negatives out of the way first so we can talk about what we like.
I think we should probably make it doubly clear to everybody that this review will contain spoilers.
Yes, definitely will contain spoilers.
So if you listen beyond this point, it's your own fault if you ruin it for yourself.
But, I mean, what I didn't like is mostly the last 15 minutes. And I thought that... from the moment Thanos turned back time with the gauntlet, I was like, okay, so nothing's going to actually change now. That's going to be it. He's going to win this movie, if you like, or maybe... I didn't expect that it would finish where it did, so I thought maybe they're going to try and fit that into this one as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of glad they didn't fit a forced-in resolve for that whole thing, because it would have just been squished into an already long runtime and wouldn't have been done any justice. But as soon as he did that sort of turn back time thing and pulled the stone out of Vision's head, I was like, yeah, this means that this is their get out. So anything that happens from this point on is pointless and really just a bit shallow, because you know what's going to happen. It's obvious what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's obvious. We were talking a little bit about this just before we started recording again. But I think it just means absolutely every major thing that happened from that point onwards, from all the character deaths, because there were plenty of them, to, the even the final post-credit stinger with the Captain Marvel logo. I just thought everything from that point on is...
I didn't really think about that until after the fact, sort of until the next day. When it happened, I was pretty surprised with the character deaths. Using the time stone to turn back time to deal with Vision and get the stone from him, that, was fairly... not predictable, but like it was logical when it happened. The all the characters dying, or not all of them, but half the characters dying, that genuinely surprised me that they did that with so many of them. And it wasn't until kind of afterwards I thought, well, yeah, they've got the time stone Infinity, so that can obviously, and the reality gel, I suppose, if it can wipe out after people, it can bring them back as well. But anyway, they've got the means to bring these people back, and I thought, well, yeah, that would be quite predictable to do it that way. Maybe they won't, but I wouldn't know how else they would do it. But then it surprised me for them to kill off, Spider-Man, Black Panther, Star-Lord, and some lesser but still big characters with that last 15 minutes. So we might be wrong. They might do something to bring them back to completely surprise, because we know really that at least some of them will be back because of the films that are lined up.
Although between now and the next Avengers, there are two films. There's Captain Marvel and then there's Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yeah, and Captain Marvel is set in the 80s, I believe.
I think it might be the 90s.
It's definitely set... I mean, I know that Nick Fury's going to be in it without his eye patch.
Yeah.
So he's definitely set before this. And Ant-Man and the Wasp is apparently set between the events of Civil War and Infinity Wars. because mm-hmm. They did explain away briefly why Hawkeye and Ant-Man weren't in this, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a throwaway line.
Just to do with them, because they've got families, it was too dangerous to be an Avenger, so they took a deal that meant they didn't have to be involved or something after Civil War, and them being criminals technically and all that kind of stuff. So that at least we had an explanation as to where they were.
Well, yeah,
it's the kind of thing that would have annoyed certain people, isn't it? Well, why weren't they there? Oh, they didn't even get mentioned where they were. It happens in all these kind of ensemble films. You know, people are still asking the new Star Wars ones. Why is Lando not turned up yet?
Yeah.
Where's Boba Fett and all that? And people just ask these questions, so it's probably best just to put in a line to explain away why they're not there.
But
presumably they'll be back in Avengers 4.
Well, I'd have thought so. It depends, doesn't it? I mean, I guess because they'll have such a small team, because it's basically all the Avengers are gone. You know, there's only...
Yeah, I mean, who's left? You've got the two... We've got three of the big deals left, though. You've got Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man left.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, because they're the bankers, aren't they?
Yeah, you know? And then there's Nebula, Rocket. War Machine, Rocket. They've still got the Hulk as well.
Yeah.
Well, they can get him out. They've got Bruce Banner.
What do you think was going on there, then? Do you think he was just... Hulk was embarrassed about losing last time, or was he scared?
Yeah, I think that's what it was, which was quite funny.
Yeah, yeah.
In itself.
I quite liked the scene with Banner in the Hulkbuster suit, beating off space dogs, I think he called them.
Yeah, so that kind of covers the ending. So we started with the ending, which doesn't make much sense. Obviously, the end of the film was Thanos looking out over everything. Yeah.
Actually, just before that point as well, there was a scene where there was a brief glimmer of hope for me, I thought, was when, you know, after he clicked the fingers and when Thor said, "What have you done?" You could see that the gauntlet was all burnt. And I thought, maybe that means that, you know, it's done for. Oh no, he's going through a portal. So there was someone I thought maybe their things don't work anymore, but then he blasted himself off to his home planet. Which, did you know Titan, that is the planet where he's called home? In the original comics, he did come from Titan, but as in Saturn's moon. That's where he lived.
Right.
Inside Saturn's moon. Yeah, Titan. But obviously, it's a different Titan.
You'd assume so,
yeah. He wouldn't be going after Saturn's moon.
Yeah. Mind you, it didn't take long to get in the Black Order guy spaceship from there to Titan, did it?
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, it would take a lot longer.
We're picking apart space travel in a superhero movie, so... Yeah.
So, what did you like about it then, Steve?
Pretty much all of it, to be honest. There wasn't much I didn't like. I like the humour and the jokes and the one-liners, as always with... Well, not as always, because Marvel films always try and put them in, but sometimes it works better than others.
Yeah.
And it worked really well in this, I think.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of throwaway ones. Yeah. Like Spider-Man saying, "Have you guys seen the really old movie Aliens?"
Well, it's the same thing he did in Civil Wars. And have you seen that old movie Star Wars?
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice little throwback.
Yeah. And so the thing from the trailer as well, where he's, you know, are we using our made-up names then? Okay, I'm Spider-Man.
It's a nice little throwaway line, I think, but it adds a lot of humour to it. And Drax saying he looks like a pirate and an angel and a baby.
The whole thing when Thor meets Guardians of the Galaxy and Star-Lord's doing his fake voice.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Yeah, his insecurities about it was just hilarious.
I did like, where is Gamora? Who is Gamora? No, why is Gamora?
Yeah, I'll do you one better. Why is Gamora?
I think my favourite line of the whole thing was, "I am Groot. I am Steve Rogers."
That was good. I was going to say one of my other favourite sort of throwaway jokey things was when War Machine and Falcon landed in Wakanda, and he says, "Are you supposed to bow?" And he goes, "He's a king." And then he starts bowing. He says, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
That was good as well. It had a nice blend of humour, and I think what helped with those humorous bits was because one of the ways that they decided to tell this story was basically through a series of battles, and the battles punctuate like the like almost if each chapter of the film is a sentence, like the punctuation is they have a fight, right? But to kind of ease you into the next bit, they always start with a joke or a moment of humour to add a bit of brevity. And I think that the way they constructed it was just quite clever, because it, unlike Age of Ultron, which was just a series of CGI fights and culminated in a big destruction of a city that you didn't even know about, really, you had no connection to, there was it was handled more deftly this time. So I think credit has to go to the screenwriters, really, and of course to the directors, because they're the ones that actually handled how that all took place. So I just thought it was told really well, which I was a little bit concerned about. But you know, the way that Anthony Russo and Joe Russo handled Captain America 3, it shouldn't have been any doubt, really, should it?
Yeah, I think probably another challenge for this one was, though, that there's so many characters in this, and also so many characters coming from different... I know they're all superhero films, but you've got the Guardians of the Galaxy coming into this, and they're obviously all set in space. So every Guardians of the Galaxy film we've had has all been quite space-orientated, different planets, all kind of things like that. You've got Doctor Strange, it's all magic and mystical, and Thor from the Asgard thing from the last side of it, and then you've got the Earth-based heroes, and it all kind of merges. They've all melded that into it. Nothing kind of really feels awkwardly in there, and kind of they kind of just tack this bit in just to get them in there. So it's a bit more of a challenge than just say Avengers Assemble, where it was all the Earth-based heroes plus Thor.
Exactly.
So it's all from the same kind of reality, I suppose.
Although, did you notice, because there was no Ant-Man in this, as we explained, and he's not, but also no Hawkeye. He wasn't in it at all. And he wasn't even sort of mentioned, was he?
Well, only in the line where they explained why he wasn't about.
Did they explain why he wasn't there?
Yeah, they said the same for why he and Ant-Man weren't there, didn't they?
What was the explanation for Hawkeye?
It was the same as what it was for Ant-Man.
Just because he's with family.
Yeah, because they first asked when they all met up at Avengers Towers with War Machine, and Ross said to arrest him, and he's like, "Yeah, I ain't gonna do that." And they said, "Where's Clint?" And he said, "Clint and Scott are doing whatever because they got families." And then somebody who hadn't been around for a while at that scene, Bruce Banner, he said, "Who's Scott?"
Oh, yeah.
Now I remember. So there's that bit there where they explained where both Clint, where Hawkeye and Ant-Man were. So,
well, at least it keeps them back for the next one, to start off with. Yeah.
I just, in a different location. So you had Titan and New York and Wakanda, where the main battles were taking place, and it all just varied up really nicely as well. Kind of different locales for different things. Wakanda looked great as usual.
What did you think of the ironmongery place with Peter Dinklage as a giant dwarf?
That was the worst bit, but I think that was more down to Peter Dinklage rather than and his character. And the CGI on it looked pretty rubbish as well.
It's funny you should say that. Yeah, that's the same thing we were talking
about. Rather than the actual bit of the film, because there were some good bits in that film. Thor trying to keep that thing open on his own, and Groot making the handle for Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
And those kind of bits, they worked quite well. But I just didn't really get on with Peter Dinklage's character in it.
No, I didn't think he was particularly well.
He was just doing his Game of Thrones voice, wasn't he?
Yeah, basically. So, with... because Loki's dead, right? He was the first to go, basically.
Yeah, well, if we talk quickly about the confirmed... nothing's confirmed, I suppose, but with the ones that weren't killed by the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
So Loki, Gamora... Heimdall.
Yeah.
Or the three.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what's happened to Korg, which is a real shame.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
I was sure there was a line in there that said that half the Asgardians survived. like he let, because Thanos' whole thing is killing half of everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there was a line in there that said, or kind of gave the hint that half the people on that Asgardian ship survived. Hopefully Korg is one of those half of them. And I think Valkyrie probably as well, because she was a quite popular character in Ragnarok, and the way they're making such a big deal about strong female characters, I think she's probably survived somehow.
Yeah, they'll probably come into the next one as well, then, I imagine.
Yeah.
You know, because they did leave out a couple of people who didn't get any mentions. So, I mean, in terms of the ones that have survived, there's obviously going to be a big team up to kick off the next one.
Yeah, I think Logan, just to go back, I think Heimdall's definitely gone, because I just don't think there's anything else you can do with him, really. Mm. I think Loki is definitely gone, which is a shame, because he was a great character, a great villain, but I think his arc is done. There's not really much else they can do with him, especially as he was now kind of on this kind of redemption arc. Mm. Like he'd turned from being against Thor and Asgard to kind of supporting them. His last act was trying to kill Thanos.
Well, I think we had Brian on this podcast sometime late last year, and we were talking about this sort of thing. And he explained Loki as just, he's the god of mischief. So he's not evil. He's not evil, he's not good. He just likes to be mischievous. Or not even likes it, that's what he is compelled to do. So,
but it did seem like in Ragnarok and the bits of him we saw in Infinity War, that he had changed more from bad to good. You know, he was forming a positive relationship with Thor, and he did care about Asgard and its people, and things like that. So it did seem like he was changing.
It makes you wonder, though, if they do reverse time, how far back do they go, do you think?
Mm.
Because the film started with Thanos kicking all their asses.
Yeah.
That's how he was introduced.
Because one of the first lines of the film is we've got a Hulk, which is what they said to Loki in Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
But then Hulk obviously got beat by Thanos.
Mm. Without the Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he have a couple of them at that point?
I think he was taking one, wasn't he? He wanted the Tesseract, which was the second one.
Yeah, I think Gamora is a possible to come back, and I think that Thanos will possibly revert time to get her back, because it's his daughter, and he's probably going to think, what's the point of, you know, he clearly loved her and cared about her.
I don't necessarily think it will be Thanos who undoes everything. I think they'll take the Infinity Gauntlet off him, and then someone like Captain America.
I just think he'll want to bring Gamora back, and that's the way that he can do it.
Unless it's Quill who does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Hulk.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many ways they could go with the next installment, and I can't even predict how they're going to do it, because I couldn't really predict a lot of the stuff that happened in this one.
There were some unpredictable bits in it. I don't think it was particularly shocking, but like...
No, I think I said in my review for Set the Tape, there was nothing groundbreaking in terms of how a superhero movie is done. Mm. It was quite formulaic. It was just bloody good.
Yeah, they did it really well.
But it wasn't like breaking the mold. It was, you know, the same pattern that most superhero films take.
Mm. But done, yeah. But like, it's
but done excellently.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, some of the surprises for me. I liked the cameo for Red Skull, because I completely forgot about him.
Yeah,
yeah. I thought his place in the story was. It'd be interesting to know what happened to him, because he got blasted there by at the end of the first Captain America film, didn't he? And we've not even heard his name mentioned since then.
Well, he said it was a Tesseract that did something to him to transport him to where he was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, because he didn't have any legs. He was floating around.
Yeah.
Yeah, so something's happened. Unless he is just a phantom, a soul or something like that. I don't know. Wasn't explained. I guess it didn't need to be, but it was quite a cool sort of, completely forgot about you. So that was a nice surprise. I liked as well when, even though I've moaned about that final 15 minutes, the bit where Thanos is pushing down on Captain America and he can't actually squash him with his hand. Because that was quite a nice, not necessarily a callback, but like if you, was it in, it wasn't in Civil War, I don't think. I think it might have been in Age of Ultron, where Captain America moves Thor's hammer.
Yeah, it was Age of Ultron, wasn't it? Yeah. Having a party when Ultron revealed himself, and Thor's trying to explain about his hammer and how you can only move it if you're worthy, and they all have a go at lifting it. Mm. And then, Captain America tries and it twitches a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. It was in a similar sort of way to that happening, it was quite cool. Mm. That's what kind of makes me think that maybe Captain America will wield the gauntlet in the next one.
Yeah.
I think it'll be him who does everything.
I liked some of the team-ups that we got that we don't usually or haven't seen before. I like the way that, they split Rocket, Groot and Thor were together. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
And seeing just, like I said, some of the combinations that you don't usually see. So Iron Man with the Guardians of the Galaxy, or Iron Man with Doctor Strange earlier on as well. I thought Doctor Strange was good. I liked Doctor Strange in this more than I liked him in his own film.
It was quite good to see him and Iron Man together, because it just shows you, like, they're not just, like, good guys. They are both egotistical and, you know, putting those two types of characters together is going to clash and cause a bit of friction. Yeah.
We didn't have Iron Man meeting up with Captain America in this film, so we kind of needed another good guy for Tony Stark to pit himself against.
Yeah.
So, to fight their ideas off against each other and everything. Mm. I think going back to Doctor Strange quickly, I think that the scenario that's playing out is, I said this to you earlier, when he was going through all the different scenarios, and they said, he said, oh, I've been looking for all the different ways this could play out. How many have you looked through? 14 million. How many do we win? One. I think this is the one, which is why when he disappears, he said to Tony, it had to be this way, or something to that effect.
Mm.
Because he knows what's going to happen. He knows that they are going to win. He knows how they're going to win. He probably knows that he isn't actually going to be dead. And that's why he's kind of said that, and he didn't look too... Whereas you had Spider-Man, like, hugging Tony Stark and going, I don't want to go. And you had Doctor Strange, who seemed quite at peace with it all. And after that point, he gave the Time Stone to Thanos after doing that thing where he saw all different things play out. So I've kind of got an inclination that he knows what's going on. He knows that this had to happen for the Thanos to be defeated.
See, I saw it as him, I can't remember the exact word, but as he was disappearing, he said something like, this was inevitable, or there was no... I can't remember exactly what he said, but anyway, I thought it was him basically admitting that there was no way for them to...
Yeah, I took it as that, as he said there was one outcome that they won, I took it as what is happening now is that outcome.
Yeah, they all have to die for them to sort him out, yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly.
But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, who knows what they're going to do in the next installment? I mean, it's already finished filming. It's out next year. So luckily we've not got too long to wait.
Mm.
I mean, if it was like 3 years down the line, it'd be a right pain.
At least it's not too far. I mean, what was quite good about this, and why I wouldn't mind watching another one to sort of tie this up, I thought Josh Brolin as Thanos was actually really good. I thought the way the character was written was considering the standard of their villains in MCU, he was really... he had a lot of depth.
Villains seem to be quite a difficult thing to pull off in a superhero movie of late. Yeah. Because they kind of never seem that menacing, and their motives are always quite flaky.
Yeah.
And you always kind of know that they're going to end up losing. I mean, who else have the MCU done well? Loki, obviously. Everyone kind of raves about him.
I liked Ronan the Accuser.
I thought he was good. He's going to be back in Captain Marvel as well.
Is he?
He is. He's the same guy, Lee Pace.
Yeah.
He's been cast as Ronan. He's going to be in Captain Marvel. It's going to involve him in some way.
Ah, that'd be quite interesting. Because do you know much about Captain Marvel?
No.
Okay.
She's not the first Captain Marvel, is she?
Well, because the...
Or perhaps she's a first human one or something.
Yeah, the original one, or the one that fought with Thanos in the comics, he was a bloke. And basically the way it works is I think the souls are entwined. So you've got like a guy, I can't remember his name, but he's just a typically wisecracking New Yorker. And he and Captain Marvel, M-A-R... And then V-E-double-L, I think his name is. Kal-El would be in Superman. They can swap places. So one becomes the subconscious and talks to the other one who's in control of her body and moves around. Yeah. And then they swap back again. Because Mar-Vell is a Kree. He's a...
Okay.
Yeah, he's a different type of alien race. But he... he and Thanos have a bit of a do, but yeah. So how this one's going to work with Brie Larson? I don't know. I don't know whether they'll keep the whole dynamic of switching between a earthly form and a alien Kree form.
Mm.
I don't know if that'll stay.
But
you know, I'm quite looking forward to seeing it. I think it might just be one of these. Every so often, don't they, Marvel throw out a film that's different? It's not just a beat 'em up type thing. You know, they have all the different heist movies and stuff.
All the different heroes seem to have their own kind of style of movie.
Mm.
Thor was the one who got the most in this, I think, though, wasn't he? He was the kind of big. I know there's a lot of main characters, Captain America and Iron Man, but Thor seemed to be the person who got all the best lines, who got all the best scenes, who got all the best action, who had the most to do, the biggest character arc in the film, and other than perhaps Thanos himself. And
he was probably the driving character behind it, because it obviously opened with him, and he was the one who landed the blow. In the final part. And he should have gone for the head, as Thanos said.
And a scene where he turns up in Wakanda is great.
Mm. Proper Thor moment. And that's what, was... Not that there was anything wrong particularly with Ragnarok, but, you know, there wasn't much Thor-ing going on. Him smashing a load of things with a big shiny weapon that throws lightning at everyone.
Now, isn't he?
Yeah.
No hammer, it's an axe.
Because his sister, who was from hell, that was another good scene where he was describing to Gamora what happened to him and how he'd been through so much. Quill just walks in front of him.
I did also like meet my friends Rabbit and Tree.
Yeah.
and then Rocket trying to get Bucky's arm.
Yes.
I'm going to get that arm.
Yeah. I liked it a lot, actually. More, you know, I'm tempted. Yeah. If I wasn't, I'm going to see, I think it's 7 Arnold Schwarzenegger films in a row, one of them overnight screenings this weekend. If I wasn't doing that, I would have.
Geez, 7?
Yeah, it's got
7 films.
Starts at 9 p.m. and ends at 11:20 in the morning.
Remember when I tried doing that with a Star Wars?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to sleep through some of them.
Yeah, I will definitely go and see Infinity Wars again. I mean, obviously, it makes it a lot easier financially if you have an unlimited card or equivalent.
Mm.
But I expect I will go again at the weekend.
Was your midnight screening 3D or 2D?
2D. Unless a film is specifically made for 3D, I won't bother with 3D. So like Gravity or Avatar, but they were made with 3D in mind. The other times I've seen 3D films, I don't think it's been worth it if they've not been made for 3D. So I just go to 2D.
Yeah. I always think of Dread as a good example of doing 3D properly.
Yeah.
That was actually part of how the whole reality was supposed to shift in Dread, wasn't it, when you took that drug and they made it work with 3D.
Like I predicted on the before with a midnight screening, No adverts, just trailers straight in.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
Didn't have to see that toss of Ben and all his people he's got 3 months of unlimited for.
Yeah.
I hate Ben. It's nearly enough to make me can my unlimited card.
Just to stick
just
it to him.
Smug little face every time I go in there. Oh, I'm Ben, and I got 3 months unlimited for getting my girlfriend Cineworld unlimited, and my plumber as well. Shut up, Ben.
Yeah, stealing all the extra months from all the other people. Like, it doesn't work like that, Ben. You recommend the...
I don't talk about films with my plumber.
No.
How do you... I make him a cup of tea and let him do his work. Who's talking about films with their plumber, Ben?
Yeah, Ben.
Fuck off, Ben. I hate Ben.
I hate all of those Cineworld things.
Like the other one they do at Cineworld, it seems to be that if just before a film starts or just before the adverts start, and they just put like a scene up, and it's some guy who's kind of flicking his unlimited card in his fingers.
Yeah,
it really winds me up for some reason. I hate it.
It's the slow-mo facial expressions that they do as well for the audience. They're so overacted and horrible.
I've never seen anyone do that in the cinema.
No. I've seen people drop popcorn down themselves. I may have even done it to myself.
I've seen someone spill nacho cheese on themselves.
Ooh.
That's so funny.
Was it the topless guy?
No. No. Luckily, weirdos in the cinema kind of have disappeared in recent years. But yeah, so I suppose we want to end this bit off by what do we think they're going to do next? Not just with Avengers 4, but where do we see the MCU going? I mean, I'm assuming because they've now got this deal with Fox and everything's such a big success, they don't intend on stopping making superhero films.
Yeah.
Everyone assumes, no one knows for definite, but everyone assumes it's people like Chris Hemsworth and Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans are getting fed up with making these movies and are going to stop soon. We've not heard anything to that effect, I suppose. We all assume that one of these big names will be killed off as well. I mean, if I was them, I'd probably quite like the idea of just coming back for like Avengers-type big movies and not doing my own solo ones anymore. Which they could probably get away with.
They probably could, yeah.
Because I imagine it's quite fun making a film like that.
I think because they all know each other so well.
Yeah.
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 It is probably fun.
Quite like camaraderie and... And they're probably fun characters to play as well.
But like there's annoying things about the MCU, I find, which is basically how they integrate the TV series to the movies. Because, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., well, Coulson died in Avengers and he's not been mentioned since, but he's running around leading this.
But none of the Avengers actually know that he's alive, and Nick Fury hasn't been around since Winter Soldier.
Mm.
So no one would, I suppose it would be people who knew, but the TV shows don't really tie in with the movies. There's references and mentions here and there, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the main one that does tie in, and they had the whole fallout from Winter Soldier and S.H.I.E.L.D. collapsing, and the whole Hydra thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. That all came up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But the whole load of shows, I don't really know how they can avoid the whole half of everyone disappearing unless the next ones are all set before or after that happens.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, like, for example, right, Luke Cage, the new series of Luke Cage comes out in June. Is that going to have been affected by the events? Was that
planned? What I mean. If it all depends on when it's set, doesn't it?
Yeah, and why aren't Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Iron Fist, Punisher? Why aren't they all helping in this fight to save the world? You know, why don't they get dragged into it? Why don't they even just turn up to do something?
But that comes back to the whole thing of, you know, why they had to explain why Hawkeye and Ant-Man aren't there, because people just ask, why aren't these people there? Why aren't they there? Where's Coulson? Where's everyone else?
And, yeah,
you know, you just have to, sometimes you just have to accept that these people aren't going to be involved.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, like, my point really about that isn't just, like, why aren't they explained where they are? I think it's, the point mainly is they aren't going to be around for the movies, basically.
No.
Are we going into phase four now? We're into phase four.
Well, they said they might do away with phases after this.
Yeah.
And just do individual. I mean, there's, other than the films that have been announced, which is only Spider-Man's sequel, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and is that actually it? Avengers 4. That's all that's been announced after Avengers 4 at the moment. So who knows what they plan on doing? I expect they've held back sort of planning anything because now they have access to more people with this deal with Fox.
Well, they still haven't announced what the name of the next Avengers film is. I think intentionally.
No.
They said it would spoil what happens in Infinity War if they explain what happened.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe don't give it that title then. Maybe just call it Avengers Superhero Smash-Up. people are going to still go and see it.
Yeah, Cities Explode episode 19 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, I've no idea where they plan on going. They've opened up so many different possibilities, especially by taking things away from Earth and going to space and going to magical realms that Doctor Strange can go to and all of these things. They've opened it up massively as to what they can do with it now. I suppose there's plenty of plots from the comic books that they could also use.
There's tons of things they haven't. I mean, we've talked about it before. They haven't done Secret Invasion or, you know. Well, there's a good one which, well, in concept is quite good, which is X-Men versus Avengers. But, you know, they couldn't do something like that because they don't have those characters yet. But stuff like Reed Richards coming in, or the Fantastic Four, if they brought those characters back to the MCU, then there's a whole scope for doing other... other dimensional or intergalactic stuff.
And there's no reason why it couldn't work, because they've managed to put all these different superheroes in with this film.
Mm.
So I'd have faith with them to, you know, there's even sort of secondary characters from Black Panther getting good time in this.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I've no idea where they're going to go with this in the future, but I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, me too.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.